The Mutual Broadcasting System presents STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk with retired Marine Intelligence Officer, Lieutenant Colonel Hal Kempfer. Now, here's Hal.
Welcome to STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk, and the world has more stuff going on than I know what to talk about. All of it has enormous strategic impact. Of course, we've seen what happened in Venezuela with that just amazing military operation and the aftermath of that, the impact it's having on Cuba with all of its oil, a lot of its cash being cut off. And that's just one part of the world where things are happening. And of course, you know, Ukraine, Russia, war is as intense as ever. Peace is definitely does not seem particularly close at any given time. And for some reason, we're threatening Greenland again, which I still can't quite figure out why we're doing what we're doing there. But now the big story really is Iran. And I have to tell you, of all the other stories, probably this is the biggest one out there. Iran is on the brink. So I'm going to talk about something strategic and that will impact all of us. It doesn't just impact Iran. It doesn't just impact the Persian Gulf or the Middle East. This has global ramifications. And so I'm going to talk about what's happening there, kind of explain what's going on, and then maybe end up talking about some of the larger implications. But as I record this episode of STRAT, the streets of over 100 cities in Iran have been filled with protesters for days. The rial, the currency of the country, is basically in free fall. It's dropped over, I think, in just a matter of a few days, it dropped over 50%. The central bank had been providing, what some say were like free dollars or cheap cash or whatever to small businesses. These are the businesses, the stores that fill the bazaars so that they can operate. They've been doing this for years and years and years because of all the currency problems, because of this huge sanction regime. They suddenly cut it off, which means the economy, a big chunk of the economy, but an essential part of the economy, has effectively stopped functioning. There isn't money to buy stuff. There isn't money for the stores to have something to sell them. And so the economy is not functioning. And that has people on the streets. They cannot get their basic needs, their basic human needs to keep going out there, to keep the country going. In addition, this falls on the heels of what just took place in June, the famous 12-day war between Israel and Iran, with the missiles flying and the drones and the airstrikes from Israel and Israel's warplanes flying basically unhindered across the Iranian skies, hitting targets all over. Certainly, one would say within Tehran, there was shock and awe of what the Israelis were doing. And all of this was happening, and that kind of broke a social contract that the people had with the regime, which is you're doing all this stuff, all this ideologically extreme stuff. You have this axis of resistance, everything. But at the core of that, they're supposed to be able to protect the homeland, the sovereign territory of Iran, and they could not do that. In fact, they could not do it at all, and they got stopped. And of course, the other part of that is it became apparent that Israeli intelligence, Mossad, military intelligence, and others had permeated throughout Iran, that they were launching these drone strikes and doing these other things. And there had been a feeling for quite some time that Israeli intelligence had been kind of running amok, if you will, throughout Iran. And certainly the regime had everybody paranoid about Israeli agents, and they'd been arresting people left and right claiming they were Israeli agents or they were CIA or whatever. And these spy charges have been a flurry of activity within Iran, to the point where I don't think anybody really believes it very much. However, they did see that there are a lot of Israeli covert capabilities that had been smuggled in there that were used in this 12-day war. And frankly, the opening salvos at war were stunningly effective. And that, again, breaks that, if you will, that social contract that somehow Iranians' autocracy, this heavy-handed government that they have, would at least protect the Iranian people or the homeland, if you will, and it couldn't do it. So it became apparent that there was a problem. The Iranian autocracy reacted to this as soon as the war had stopped, as the ceasefire was put in place. They reacted by basically arresting 20,000 Iranians. And you can be sure that the vast, vast, vast majority of those had absolutely had done nothing wrong. They had, except maybe they didn't like the regime. And so they became arrested. They were charged with being spies. It's kind of implied that many of them were treated horribly, probably tortured, and no doubt many were killed. And so that's all been happening in the last 6 months, this backlash against Iranian society in the name of going after the Israelis. Now the regime is faced with this onslaught of protests. It's shut down the internet, phone lines, trying to block information, images, video from getting out to the world and getting out to the Iranian people. But that really isn't quite working. We are getting video. We are seeing some of these protests. Now, they can't stop the satellites from taking pictures, the commercial satellites from taking pictures of what's going on the ground. And the regime itself has put out images which were just shocking. They put out images that showed bodies piled high on the streets, bodies clogging hospitals and morgues, people walking around looking for their friends, loved ones, family, and an Iranian announcer basically saying that these were ordinary citizens, implying that if ordinary citizens go out there and protest, you will be killed. A heck of a deterrence message, but that's what they're putting out. As of this podcast, there are credible reports that up to 12,000 Iranians have been slaughtered by the regime to stop the protest. Reports have come out that the Revolutionary Guard Corps literally goes to these protests, lines up, and they just start firing, automatic fire, into the crowds and just mowing them down. Some of the most horrific, stuff I've ever heard of. The Iranian regime is trying to stay in the power by killing the Iranian people, and that cannot go on forever. And I will say this. A lot of times we hear these numbers and they don't have a lot of impact. But if you look at the deaths in previous Iranian protests, nothing even comes close to this 12,000. I think the regime is going to pay for that in major ways. And of course, now, as I'm speaking here and recording this, they're talking about doing the first public hangings, executions of protesters. And that, again, meant to be a deterrent to the protesters, may actually have the exact opposite effect. That's what's going on. That's what's happening over there. And now, with all that, Reza Pahlavi, the exiled crown prince, the Shah's son, called on President Trump to take action against the Iranian regime sooner rather than later. President Trump has been saying many times that he's got the backs of the protesters, that he's going to take action to support them. He's not going to let the Iranian regime kill them. And basically, he's made it very clear that the U.S. is going to do something, implying some sort of strike. Now, he's coming off of an amazing, well-executed series of strikes against Iranian nuclear sites in June during the 12-day war. He's coming off of this just stunningly effective special operation where they captured Maduro and his wife in Venezuela. And that was, in December. And so he's coming off of this, obviously feeling pretty good about what's just happened, about what's taking place here. I think I said December. I think I'll have to check the dates, but very recently, last week or so. And so it really is stunning what the U.S. military is doing, but this is a different type of mission. Now, right now, the opposition to the regime is very large. It seems somewhat overwhelming, but it's not very well organized. It's still broken up into various different groups. There isn't one cohesive, singular voice. There's no central figure that I can point to, and there's no identifiable alternative to the regime. There is just mass dissatisfaction with the regime itself. Reza Pahlavi, he's lived in exile, and whereas he does have some followers, certainly within Iran, obviously because of who he is, he's identified with the Shah of Iran that was deposed in 1979. Although he has kind of foisted himself in a sort of a PR campaign, he's foisted himself as an interim national leader. And with all the strange things going on with this, I don't discount that as a possibility that he might somehow become an interim leader just because there is nobody else to point to right now in the short run. That may change. So what options does President Trump have? Well, one thing that before we start talking about strikes in Iran, we can put more sanctions on the Iranian regime. We can crank down even harder on how they do finance, how they do everything around the world. We can increase the interception of tankers carrying sanctioned Iranian oil. And as you've seen, certainly it started with Venezuela, but it's probably going to broaden that we're going after these shadow fleet tankers all over the world. And this is oil that's carrying, these are tankers that are carrying sanctioned oil from not just Iran and Venezuela, but also from Russia. And so that has a macro effect on the global economy. If we launch strikes, military strikes, we have a twofold problem. Attacks from a foreign power on any country can really rally the population on very nationalist lines, and that could inadvertently bolster the regime and set back the protesters. So it could cause the exact opposite of the effect that we want to do. And certainly if any of these attacks kill a lot of civilians, you know, collateral damage, that can accelerate that process of bolstering the regime and probably increase the size of the problem that we face in terms of what we're trying to accomplish. So that's a big issue that we have to look at. Iran has a lot of missiles. They have a lot of drones, and they can use these for retaliation. Taking out Iranian missiles is not a simple one-strike thing. This is not going to be June again. They have missiles all over the country. They got drones all over the country. We would have to hit a lot of targets. We would have to hit a lot of targets multiple times, which means we'd have to put aviators and aircraft into harm's way multiple times, increasing the chances that one of them or some of them could become casualties themselves. So there's a lot to that. There's a lot of risk that goes with doing something like that. But we have to do that because if we were to hit them, they're going to retaliate. It's not an if, it's just when and where. And we have military bases, installations, facilities, U.S. interests all up and down the Gulf, in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain, in the UAE, in Kuwait, in Qatar. Basically, everywhere they look across the Persian Gulf, they can find U.S. targets to hit, or targets that they might want to hit for some other reason to, you know, directly or indirectly hit the U.S. And so there is that consideration right there. And not all of these things can be effectively intercepted. Not all these things have a big missile battery. There is no Iron Dome that sits over the Persian Gulf to protect it from Iran. So it's assumed that some of this stuff will go in. So there will be some damage if that's done. Also, we have a limited number of interceptor missiles. And if we start taking out a large number of Iranian missiles and Iranian drones, we have less interceptor missiles left over. And we have other things to worry about than just Iran. We have global concerns, and those missiles are high value and not particularly high density assets that we want to make sure we don't waste. So that's huge. So neutralizing Iran is it's a tall order. It means the relatively small attack like we did back in June is probably not an option. All right. As such, it's a real challenge to see how we're going to leverage military means and what targets we're going to look at. But it is also very difficult to see how the regime could actually survive. They cannot fix the economy anytime real soon, all right? They cannot protect the country from outside military strikes. And now they've taken the step of just wholesale slaughtering of its own people just to stay in power. From what I'm seeing, this looks like the end of a government, not a government that's going to reinvent itself. And eventually, as we've seen with these, you know, the protests just seem to get bigger and bigger every time these things happen. Eventually, the Iranian people will overthrow this regime. What that will look like, I don't know. But certainly, I think the Ayatollah will be displaced as a supreme leader. Whether anybody else or any other pillars of government exist, I don't know. I would also imagine they would get rid of the Revolutionary Guard Corps. And there's a very, and this has been talked about for years, there's a very distinct possibility that within the ranks of the regular military, the Artesh, not the Revolutionary Guard Corps, but the regular military and the regular police forces, that they at some point could turn around, just look at the atrocities of the ideological regime components and say, enough is enough. And you have to remember, these are people who have families back home too. Their families implicitly will be some of those that may be massacred by the regime. to stay in power, and there's a very good chance they could end up triggering the military, not the very, very top ranks. Those guys are usually picked for ideological purity, but within those ranks, you could see where they could manifest just an absolute, you know, absolute anger and frustration to go after the regime, and they could turn on the Revolutionary Guard Corps and neutralize them. That's very possible. So there's, you know, if you look at it now, you have all components of society. You got the poor, you have the middle class, you have, you know, certainly those who are driven by desire for freedom and democracy and everything else. You have all components of society pretty much involved in the protests. And it's all focused on this regime, its mismanagement, its corruption, its ideologically driven idiocy in terms of what it does domestically and internationally. And you have a country, the Persian people themselves, Iranian people, the Persian people are amazing. They're well-educated. They're sophisticated. It's a very, very capable national society group, if you want to call it that. They just have this awful regime. They've had this thing for 45 years. It's fomented horrific terrorism across and war across the region. Its proxy group, Hezbollah in Lebanon, was responsible for the deaths of 241 Marines and sailors in 1983 in Beirut. That was the first time I personally knew someone who was killed for terrorism by terrorists. Their proxies in Yemen, the Houthis, have been disrupting global trade by blocking the Red Sea and the use of the Suez Canal through their anti-ship missile program. And in short, the Iranian regime has earned the ire of many people in many lands, but now it appears that the Iranian people, after many starts before that were not successful, are finally fomenting enough that they might be able to throw off the yoke of this very oppressive autocratic theocracy. This has some big implications. If the regime is overthrown, if a pro-U.S. regime or government takes its place, potentially they could cut off gas and oil going to China. Matter of fact, they could take that gas and oil that was going to China, and they could then enter into the market to sell it to Europe to replace the gas and oil that Russia used to provide. And so potentially you could see something really remarkable happen, which is Europe could completely toss away any reliance on Russian oil and gas a lot faster than they intended to. China could be stuck trying to get any oil and gas on the global market, because that would be kind of controlled now. And it's then for China, this has implications because they just lost their ability to get oil from Venezuela. That's been blocked. And then the Russian shadow fleet tankers are occasionally being intercepted by U.S. forces at sea. So that's become a problem. And so this portends a potential resource crisis for China, and one of possible momentous proportions. And I would always point out that in the Pacific, you got to remember the problems that Japan had in 1941 with getting scrap iron for their, and of course, oil to keep their industrial economy going. And we saw what happened there. So very interesting what this could implicate or what this could imply for the global economy and our global security order, if you will. Anyway, all that said, in Iran, we're at the brink of something rather momentous. In some ways, depending on how it goes, it could be bigger than the fall of the Berlin Wall. I'm saying it's bigger than the collapse of the Soviet Union, but it's certainly bigger than the fall of the Berlin Wall, and the fallout could happen very soon. And we cannot be entirely sure what will occur, but we certainly can't ignore it, because it will impact all of us in some way, shape, or form. Thanks for listening to Strat. Please visit stratpodcast.com. You can also go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kempfer TV, and you can always go to my corporate website at gripsa.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you listen to the next one.
Strat Strategic Risk Assessment Talk with Hal Kempfer is presented by the Mutual Broadcasting System and is always accessible at stratpodcast.com, as well as most leading podcast portals, including Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. For more of Hal Kempfer's current events, media appearances, please visit halkempfertv.com. Be sure to like and subscribe to Strat at your favorite podcast provider.